107.2 FM.
Radio Reverb.
You are listening to the Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, available on DAB, on the web, and where you find your podcasts. My name is Helen Packham, and I am in the driving seat this month. And as always, I am with my co-host, the fabulous Lisa Moore. Hello, Lisa.
Hey, Helen, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. It's lovely to see your beautiful face. And we have a special guest on the show who will be coming to shortly. Her name is Jude Bolton, as she is the founder of Speaking Works. The reason why we have brought Jude on is because we have a theme to this month's show, which is why add public speaking to your 2022 goal list. This is a kind of new vibe we're testing out here on the Brighton Business Show. We're focusing on themes and topics that we can discuss around and bringing on people who can add value and information around the particular subject area. And wanted to choose this particular subject because it's something that is close to both Lisa and my hearts. This is something that we're both very much involved with in different ways. And so we thought it'd be a really good thing to explore around in terms of what we're going to talk about today. So, Lisa, you kick off, because obviously I know about your journey with public speaking, but yeah, tell us a little bit about it.
Just to put it out there, if you were to ask people what they were most scared of in their life, I think the fear of public speaking comes higher than death.
Yeah, number one social phobia.
Exactly, exactly. And for me, especially when I was in my corporate career and I was in a sales position where you're sort of almost expected to be good at giving presentations and confident and all that sort of stuff. And for the 10 years that I was in a sales role, I managed to avoid doing any presentations. I think I might have done one where I actually was forced to do it, but I did everything in my power not to do it because I was scared. I felt that nobody wanted to listen to me. I didn't know what to talk about. And I think that this will come out during our talk, is that I think knowing what you're going to talk about is actually really helpful. But then fast forward to when I left my corporate career, I set up my own business and I went to a conference focusing on fitness. And I remember sitting in the audience, listening to the guy that ran this big agency, talking about the fact the best way to get more clients, grow your business, would be to be good at public speaking, you know, to run workshops, to do talks, to go out to organizations. And I sat there thinking, I know that you are absolutely right, but I am petrified. And he talked about an organization called Toastmasters. Toastmasters International, I have to be clear on that, because in the UK, when you say Toastmasters, we tend to think of those guys in the long red jackets that welcome the bride and groom for their wedding breakfast. But Toastmasters International is an organization that was set up, I think, almost 100 years ago by a guy in America who wanted to bring leadership skills to everybody. He wanted all of the workers to be able to have these skills. So he set up Toastmasters, and originally it was just a boys thing. But gradually over the years, they invited women too. And it's an organization where you learn how to become a better public speaker. So I joined and I went along to Lewis Speakers Club, walked in the room, nearly walked out again because I just thought, oh my God, scary, scary. And was welcomed with open arms by all these lovely people from all sorts of different walks of life, different ages, different experiences. And they were wonderful. And that was sort of the start of my speaker journey, I guess. You know, cut the long story short, that led me on to going and sharing my personal story on stage at an event called Inspiring Talks Brighton, which now I've talked about on this show time and time again. So I went as a speaker and then ultimately ended up taking over Inspiring Talks Brighton, which I absolutely loved. It's just enabled me to, well, it's grown my confidence. I think that's the biggest thing, grown my confidence. I've met some amazing people, including you, Helen, because that's how we met. And it's been great for my business because you know, when you can talk to people confidently, it makes just a huge difference. And so that's sort of my journey with public speaking. And I know that you've got one similar but different.
Yeah, no, it's really actually great to hear. I didn't actually know the beginning bit of that story.
Wow.
No, it's really great to hear that. And so, I mean, for me, I never envisaged going down this particular path in terms of career. I always wanted to be an actress. And I was really shy. So acting gave me confidence.
Yeah.
So that's why I got into a career in learning and development, because standing up in front of people and training them and gave me the same confidence. So that was my career. And I chose that and climbed the ladder and trained leaders and trained them over the years in things like communication and influence and how to communicate more effectively with your people. And people sort of gradually started to come into me more for things like that, how to stand up, because I worked with introverted actuaries and accountants. So it, not generalizing, but generally speaking, a lot of people within those niche areas have more of an introverted personality, so might find it more difficult to talk to rooms of people. So I picked up storytelling as this tool to help them. And loved doing that, then obviously left to have a baby and had my own crisis of confidence. I got diagnosed with an anxiety disorder and hid, left my career, said I'd never stand up in front of a room full of people again. So it was that journey from sort of coming out the other side of that, putting a mission on my vision board to do a TEDx talk, being able to do the TEDx talk, and then people coming to me and saying, how did you do that? Because I only had 24 hours notice to do that. How did you do that with 24 hours notice? Ah, well, I used to help people with this type of thing. And that's how this particular business came about, really. It was really through my own experience and I guess my corporate background and knowing that actually the things that help me feel confident while standing on a stage aren't necessarily the things that you would normally associate with confidence, although a lot of them actually are as well. But storytelling for me is such a natural tool. So that's what I've continued to develop and help people to use, because it helps you feel relaxed. It helps you feel more natural, more authentic. And I know we're going to be talking about that with Jude, so that you don't feel robotic and you don't feel somebody you're not. Because I think for me, putting on an armor, putting on a persona did help me to become confident. But I soon realized that actually you can just tweak yourself up a bit. You can dial yourself up a little bit and that can give you the confidence. You don't have to be somebody else. You don't have to be someone you're not.
That's really interesting. That was one of the things that I found when I joined Toastmasters. I walked in that room with a very much corporate head on. I remember watching, there was a particular lady who, very, very intelligent lady, had an immense vocabulary, you know, could come up with all these amazing words. And I was like, oh my goodness, I'm never going to be that good. So first of all, I tried to be the corporate presenter. And then I tried to be like this woman. It just didn't work. It wasn't me. It wasn't who I was. And it was only when I sort of thought, do you know what? I'm just going to talk from Lisa, as opposed to putting another persona on. That's when the penny dropped for me. And I realized that I didn't have to be anyone else apart from myself.
Oh, that's brilliant. For me, it's this unbecoming, isn't it? We have a corporate armor. We, from working within office environments and corporate environments, we realize we have to sort of adopt a persona or an armor. But actually, and I always come back to that quote, maybe the journey isn't about becoming anything. It's about unbecoming everything that isn't really you, so you can be who you're meant to be in the first place.
Yeah, love that.
Public speaking is absolutely about that. And I know all of us here today will agree with that. And we'll go into that in more detail in a bit. But for anyone listening who's thinking, do I want to put public speaking on my goal list for this year? Well, we all want to say absolutely yes. But let's have a chat about why. You know, let's think about the business owners that might be listening to this. Why is it good, if you're a business owner, why is it good to do public speaking?
It's really interesting, especially with the last couple of years, and we've all had to go online, haven't we? And we're all in these Zoom rooms, these team rooms, and suddenly not only are you doing public speaking, but you're on video as well, you're on camera. Having the ability to feel comfortable speaking in front of an audience, and the audience could be one, the audience could be 10, the audience could be thousands, but having the confidence to be able to speak about what do you do, how do you do it, why do you do it, why do you love what you do, how can you help, to be able to articulate and speak those with authenticity and with passion is only going to set to grow your business. And it grows your visibility. People get to know who you are. People's, you know like and trust is the thing that they talk about. I think it's absolutely fundamental to help your business, because nowadays you have to be visible, and that's verbally and physically, to be found. Yeah,
totally agree. And I think it's, when you think about, when I work with a lot of clients, and I've got this system called the AIR system, and it stands for authority, impact and reach, and it doesn't just cover speaking, like speaking, public speaking is like one element of the communication required in your business. It's about the authority. It's about your ideas and your messages, your story, how you communicate your services to people. It's about how you do that over face-to-face networking, or via a podcast interview, like a radio interview, or via webinars or live streams or workshops or keynotes or TED Talks. So there's so many different ways that we communicate with people. And as you say, it's so important to be visible. If you are standing front and center of your business, if you are a business where you want to get known, have an impact, make money, change lives, if you want to get in front of lots of people in lots of different ways, then this is a skill that can transcend all of those different areas. So I think you're right, Lisa, rather than thinking public speaking as the act of standing on a stage, zoom out and think, okay, it's about my communication.
It is. That is absolutely it. It's because when you say public speaking, I would think most people would probably, in their mind's eye, see a stage or a big auditorium or a big room with lots of people in it. But public speaking doesn't have to be that. Public speaking, or it's impromptu. It's walking into that networking room, going up to somebody you don't know and starting a conversation. That skill is just as important as being able to stand on stage in front of 10,000 people.
Yeah, true. And it's the same skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how many of us are scared? We talked about on that last month's show, when we were talking about networking, you know, a lot of people are scared of going to networking because they've got to go and talk to people they don't know.
Mm. So when we think about communication and confidence, I think that those two obviously are very, very linked. And as you mentioned at the beginning, confidence is a huge benefit of doing public speaking, but confidence is also a reason why people don't. Lack of confidence is a reason why people don't show up, why people don't share their stories, why people don't go put themselves forward for opportunities to stand on stage, who hold back and shy away from that because of a lack of confidence. However, the outcome of doing something like that, it really is a confidence booster, right?
Yeah.
How do we understand what the blocker is for us in terms of confidence? Because that can be there for so many reasons, can't it?
It's the fear, isn't it? You know, it's the fear thing, because there's a fear of, what are people going to think about me? How are they going to judge me? There's a fear of not being good enough. So, do you know enough? You know, this was one for me, is that the worry that I'm telling them something they already know. Why do they need to hear that from me? Because they already know that. And there's so many people far better than me to communicate that. Mm-hmm. And then it's the fear of being rejected, isn't it?
Yep. Socially, yep. And there's that feeling of perceived shame. Mm. If we're caught out in a public forum, or the spotlight's put on us and we make a mistake. Yep. So it's perceived fear of, you know, the whole false evidence appearing real. So I'm fresh off the back of a big event that I was a curator and speaker coach for. And, you know, 90% of the people backstage, either the day before or before their talk, were experiencing that fear. They were feeling that fear for all of the reasons that you said. You know, I'm not as good as the other people. What if I muck it up? What if they don't like it? What if the audience are cold with me? what if, what if, what if? And guess what happened? They all smashed it. They all smashed it. They got standing ovations, warm applause, laughter, such feel-good vibes. And afterwards I said, so what was that all about? And I'm like, I have no idea, but I feel amazing now.
Well, I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because if you put yourself in the audience, so imagine yourself in the audience right now and you've gone to listen to somebody speak. You in the audience want that person to do well. You're not there to think, right, I'm going to judge them. I'm going to throw something at them. Unless you're a comedy club, that's slightly different. But generally, you in the audience have gone there because you want to learn something and you want them to do well. And even if they stumble or they forget what they were going to say, you're willing them to do it. And you feel proud of them that they've done it. And I remember sitting in audiences and thinking, wish that was me. I wish that was me. They're so good. I want to be like them. So when you flip it around the other way and you're on stage looking out at the audience, you have to remember the audience are on your side.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think, you know, we've given a good case in terms of if you're a business owner, it's not just about thinking, oh, I want to stand on a stage and earn money, reach loads of people, share my idea with the world, share my story. It's also by developing this skill of public speaking, of communicating verbally, I'm going to be helping myself in all the different areas of my business, in putting myself out there, in getting visible, in generating leads, in communicating effectively, in signing clients, and doing that little bit for the greater good in helping others in whatever way, shape, or form my talk will do that. So I think we've made a good case there. Well, I mean, we are a little bit biased, but
a little bit.
And anybody who is listening and thinking, no, please just message us, you know, we're here to sort of alleviate those sorts of things and talk to people. And we love interacting with people that would listen to the show.
Yeah.
Radio Reverb.
97.2.
Radio Reverb.
Okay, so that's why adding public speaking to the goal list for 2022 is a good idea. But let's hear from another expert. Now, I am really excited that we have a special guest on this month's show. Her name is Jude Bolton, and she is the founder of Speaking Works. And she really helps people by delivering voice communication and coaching, and building people's confidence by managing nerves and creating engaging speakers. So I'm really, really excited to welcome you on the show today, Jude.
Thank you, Helen. So hello, Helen, and hello, Lisa. Really nice to be here today. Thank you for having me.
You are most welcome. So Jude, we're all about stories, I've got a little bit of information about your background and how you came to found this amazing business that you have. And I know around life you've got two wee ones as well, so that's amazing also. But tell us a little bit about your story and how we've shared ours, how you came to do this.
It's a long one, so I'm trying to think, you know, let's not bore people too much with a long story, but I'd say so many different factors brought me to doing what I do. I think some of them are a bit like you, Helen. I was really into acting when I was younger. I went to classes, after school classes, where I prepared for Lambda examinations. And for those of you that don't know, Lambda is the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts. So a bit like music exams, grades 1 to 8, and you can do acting, public speaking, poetry, mime, and so on. And I always found them a really good foundation, really good fun. But I think I was always happy speaking and communicating, but I think they also gave me that extra boost and I really enjoyed those classes. So I kind of always had that in the back of my mind. So I started doing classes for children, after school classes. It was after working in a few different jobs. I did some random things like managing celebrities at a charity, so kind of ambassadors of a charity. And then also I worked at a talent agency as a PA to the chairman there, which was a kind of baptism of fire in terms of being strong and speaking up for yourself and you know, being good at communicating with people of all sorts and celebrities and your co-workers, etc. So I think that was all kind of really fascinating. But I moved to Hong Kong and I started teaching because I couldn't really manage celebrities out there. So that's the kind of weird jump, is going to Hong Kong, starting up Lambda Teaching, starting my own business. I feel like they really back you out there. I feel like there's a lot of kind of negative energy when you start your own business in England. There's a lot of kind of, why would you do that? That's too risky. Don't go there. I mean, I'm kind of simulating my parents here and a lot of people's parents, I think, because it's not kind of what you do. It's not safe. It's not a kind of great choice. But I think in Hong Kong, everyone's like, yeah, great. You know, do that. That's brilliant. So it was really interesting. And I came back to the UK and started running classes, and it was really hard. You know, I didn't go from a kind of business angle of how can I make loads of money and be really successful. I had no business experience. I just liked speaking and thought classes like that were brilliant, and that it wasn't taught enough in schools, and people needed the opportunity to go to a class where they could just build confidence and be better speakers. So kind of less jazz handy and more just kind of fun games, but also kind of learn how to communicate well and also just normalize the process of speaking in front of other people. That's kind of my main aim with my business. But it's interesting, I've never worked full time on my business, despite founding it in 2012. I went back to waitressing to fund it. I then started working in schools as a private Lambda teacher. And then I started as a specialist drama teacher. I worked across a private school and kind of was going to three-year-olds doing Incy Wincy Spider, and then going to work with sixth formers doing their Shakespeare pieces. And it was a really, and then rushing back home to run my own classes, and found it really, really fascinating, but also kind of knew I always wanted to work with adults as well. So that was always at the back of my mind, and ended up doing an MA. So running the business still, getting other people to teach the classes and attending this MA, which was at the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama. So the MA was in voice studies. So I loved it. I learned so much. I felt like before that I kept sort of having to just say, oh, I'm just really good at it. I'm just good at it, you know. And I feel like, oh, do I need this piece of paper? You know, whilst I was in Hong Kong, I did a diploma with Lambda as well, to just say, you know, because I didn't have qualified teacher status, didn't ever want to go down that route because I'm from a family of teachers. I was like determined not to just teach in a school. So I was like, I will not train and get teacher status. I will not. I'll do it all privately. But sort of felt like I wanted to make sure I kind of had all bases covered. So I did a diploma, which was in speech and drama and education with Lambda, and then eventually did this MA, which I didn't think I could ever do because it was very expensive, but was very fortunate enough to get a loan actually from the bank of mum and dad, who were very, very kind to give it to me because I didn't have lots going, but were very generous. And it made a huge difference because I loved doing it, and started working with businesses from that point, really. I worked for the university that I trained at in their business team, and I've worked with some fantastic companies, and it's all kind of my own training, but they used to kind of get me the jobs, which was a great kind of jump. And then always on the side, I've been looking for stuff with Speaking Works. But pretty much after my MA, I had kids, and I've got a four-year-old and a one-year-old tomorrow. So just trying to juggle everything, really.
That's actually really fascinating to hear. There's a real, you know, academic background in terms of the way that you have done this, and going to Hong Kong. I mean, gosh, that must have been so interesting culturally in terms of what you were doing there with this type of work. And I'd be interested to hear in a minute your kind of observations around that, because I work with people from all different cultures now within organizations. It's really interesting around that. Do you have any observations around that? Was it with mainly children that you were
mainly with children? Okay, yeah. Mainly with children. I mean, yeah. I feel like it was an interesting jump because obviously you've got really intelligent children out there. They work really hard. I mean, sometimes I think the concept of play is missed a little bit, because I've had several conversations with children where I said, what do you play? And they'll just list instruments. Okay. I'll say, no. When do you play? And they do play. But, you know, there is a really strong kind of work ethic, isn't there? Yeah. And I think parents were just starting to understand the importance of the need to communicate, because I think, you know, we all know you can have X, Y, and Z certificates in different areas, and you can be extremely intelligent, but can you teach somebody else that, or can you inspire, or can you sell? Yeah. And this is the problem we had with adults, which I'm sure you know you experience, Helen, and yes, you, Lisa. It's fine if you've got the knowledge, but is anyone going to listen?
Exactly. And that's why it's a universal language, right?
Yes.
The communication in whatever language it is a universal tool and skill. So having that huge different mix of experience is, you know, fantastic. That's led you to where you are. And I guess, you know, at the moment, so happy birthday for your little one for tomorrow.
Thank you.
So I guess in terms of more, so what you do now, so in terms of the types of things that you specifically focus on, the types of people that you help.
Yeah, so I would say I kind of specialise in managing anxiety around communications. Two probably big reasons around this. One, because it's the biggest problem, as you've already highlighted, you know, public speaking being terrifying to most people. I also think that people tend to just have a blanket response or label of, I don't do that. No, don't do that. Don't like it. It causes me terror, so I can't do it. You know, it's a bit like children saying they're shy. You know, I don't believe you should be giving somebody that. It's not a permanent thing. You can't say I'm 5'4" and I'm shy. They're not the same thing. You're not going to suddenly grow taller, but you can become confident. So I think it's really important not to have that label. And adults I work with just say, you know, I don't do it. I can't do it. You know, often they can't. They say they can't speak louder. They physically say they can't. Things like that tend to be a real issue. So it tends to be the biggest problem, which is why I kind of specialize in it. But also I had an awful, you know, I said there were lots of reasons that got me here. And one is, I haven't mentioned, which I had vocal nodules, which is I won't go into unless you want to know more, but you know, lots of singers have that problem where they basically abuse their vocal cords or folds and they ultimately get little bumps on them. And it means I actually lost my voice. And it didn't get diagnosed properly and nobody ever taught me. I used to do lots of kind of amateur dramatics outside of university and school and things. Nobody ever taught me how to breathe. Nobody taught me how to communicate properly. So I kind of did everything wrong, you know, with that. And the second thing that brought me is the fact that I was very anxious in one of my first jobs. And I have always relied on being a very confident person, a very confident communicator. And sometimes I've thought to myself, oh, I've got this interview. I may not have X, Y, and Z in terms of certifications or this or that, but actually I'm pretty good at interviews. Yeah, I can rely on that. And I'm fortunate that I'm quite happy doing an interview. I love talking, as you might have noticed already. But I was in this job where I had a very difficult manager and I just lost the ability to communicate properly. And then it all became around emotions and the fact that I would start to get upset before I could say what I wanted to say. And I think most adults I now work with experience the same thing, but don't know there's a solution. And I wish at that time someone had said, hey, you know, you can actually control some of what you're doing. It's hard, but you do have some control. Whereas it feels like a very, you know, fear, lack of, you know, this inability to communicate and speak well or speak with clarity is something that you can actually do something about. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I've kind of ended up working with most of my clients and most of my companies on how to kind of speak with confidence, how to have difficult conversations and how to manage anxieties.
I think that sounds amazing, Jude, because I can resonate with that whole fear thing and that emotional thing coming up. When I was in my corporate career, I remember that feeling of being in a room with actually predominantly men, because I worked in IT, so it was predominantly men. I was just almost feeling like I wanted to just slide under the table. I could feel my chest constricting, my throat constricting, the emotion coming. And I can distinctly remember a particular meeting where I was supposed to be, you know, curating the meeting or running the meeting. And I literally just handed it over to somebody. I just sort of said, great to see you here today. Let me introduce you to Mark or whatever his name was. And that was it. I shut up for the rest of the meeting, even though we'd had a big meeting before and we'd worked out who was going to say what and how we were going to do it. And I just went quiet. That whole anxiety. And I really wish somebody had been able to help me with that at the time.
Mm. It reminds me of when, and I've actually spoken about this on a podcast recently because I don't really talk about it, my blushing problem. I still have it now, but I was terrible when I was younger. The slight in a meeting, somebody directing a question at me, anybody putting me in a spotlight situation where I wasn't prepared or I didn't feel in control, I'd blush and I'd choke, you know, like literally not be able to articulate myself because I was so conscious of the burning red in my face.
Yeah, and I used to wear a scarf because I used to get that creeping red up my chest and into my neck. Didn't go so much in my face, but my chest would go red and people pointed it out to me. So I always wore a scarf, which made me boiling hot, which probably wasn't the right thing to do, but exactly the same.
Yeah. I feel really bad for the beetroot among us because I go absolutely bright red. You know, I've got very pale sort of see-through skin and there is no hiding it. The minute I get embarrassed, I am absolutely beetroot and I get called out and it's really tough, isn't it? It takes a long time and if I cry as well. So I used to cry in this job and it was really unlike me because I, you know, there's nothing wrong with crying. Side note, crying is extremely important to release tension, but I didn't cry that much in a difficult pressured situation, but in that situation I did, and then it becomes a vicious circle because then you think, oh my goodness, I'm going to cry, and then because you're thinking that, you do cry. Yeah. And it was an office of about 500 people and you had to walk through half the floor to get to the toilet, so there's no, you know, everybody would see you and you'd think about that and it's just unbearable. Mm-hmm. Isn't it?
So you've got a big why behind your business, which, you know, there's lots of different reasons why you do what you do, which obviously must give you a huge passion for the people that you work with. And I liked what you said, that you say you work with their mind, body and voice. And actually, obviously, anxiety is like a symptom to treat the cause of. And once you have treated that cause, helping in these three areas, mind, body and voice, that can really unlock people's confidence.
Radio Reverb. Shush now, I'm doing a trailer. For the Folkhampton Radio Show, it's every Thursday from 5 p.m. here on Radio Reverb. My name is Chris Thorpe Tracy, and I will play you an hour of folk, trad, psych, great songwriters. There's usually geese too, but don't worry about them. Let me give your ears a treat. Ooh, that sounds a bit weird. So that's Folkhampton, Thursdays, 5 p.m. on the mighty Radio Reverb 97.2. Okay, you can honk now.
I'm interested in the voice stuff. There was a TEDx by a chap called Julian Fellows, I think. A TED talk, or it's a really famous one. And he talks about the importance of voice. Now, I always say, you know, people say, oh, body language is the biggest percentage of how you... Well, I think, you know, what you say and how you say it is actually really, really important when it comes to public speaking. And I really help people with the what. I do help people with the how, but the voice, I'm really interested because obviously you've got your master's in voice studies. This is a huge part of your background. How do you work with people with how they sound?
So I mean, this is the kind of fundamental, you're right, you know, body language is so important, and I work with that on people, with people all the time, because it's about how you're portraying yourself. And like Lisa said, like, you know, presenting yourself with confidence, we have mirror neurons in the brain, so we're copying each other. So if you don't look comfortable, you're ultimately making someone else feel uncomfortable. But when it comes to the voice, it's back to this element that I mentioned where, you know, we can control a lot more than we think. And the reason it's the mind and the body and the voice is that we have to start, you know, in my training, in my MA, we are taught specifically to look at the body first.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. You got to look at the body. You got to look at the alignment in the body and release of tension in the body. Only then can you look at how you breathe. Because, of course, if you're completely closed and completely small and terrified, you're not going to be able to take a good breath. If you don't take a good breath, you cannot voice properly. Mm. And if you think about fear and fight or flight, everything that happens in that moment is basically the exact opposite of what we need to communicate well. Mm. Right? So we are still in a position where our body thinks the saber-toothed tiger has come to get us. Therefore, our body helps us to be able to hit harder, run away faster, or stay very, very still. And that entails, you know, apologies for those of you that are very au fait with kind of what happens in fight or flight. But most people don't realise things like we stop digesting food because it's more important to send the blood elsewhere in the body. And for most people, the breath will quicken and we'll be in panic mode. And that's why people will always say, oh, I just didn't say what I wanted to say. Or when people walk out that meeting and go, that is not how I wanted it to go. That's because you cannot think clearly because your body is in fight or flight.
Yes.
I think half the problem is most of us don't admit we're in fight or flight or notice. And many of us do. And we say, oh, we're terrified.
Yeah.
But I've worked with, you know, CEOs and people high up that go like, Jude, you know, I've got it. I'm confident. I'm happy. I've just got to work on the delivery. And they'll be zooming through what they say. And that's because of an element of fear.
Which is still rooted in the body. I totally get that. Mm. Isn't when I said about the body, you know, that percentage of body language, as in body language, but in the physiology that then affects the presence and how you communicate. I totally get that. And it's so important because if that goes, then of course we can communicate from our mouths the way that we want to rather than it feeling really dry and like we want to race through something because we're not in that fight flight. I remember before my TEDx being such in a fight flight that I was going to run out of the place. I wasn't going to do it. I was going to bottle it. And then I froze behind backstage. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, I had to do my power, power posing.
Yeah.
My Amy Cuddy power posing and my repeated affirmations, drink a ton of water, go out and take a deep breath. And then the nerves did. And after you've got over the little hump,
yes,
you get over that little initial hump, you can just sink into it, can't you? And then the practice comes in. So interesting talking to you and hearing your angle and your perspective, isn't it, Lise?
It really is. And actually, just picking up on what you just said there, is the what we talk about in Toastmasters is the power of the pause. So not only is the power of the pause powerful to deliver the message, but the pause is also really helpful for you as the speaker to just ground you and to take that breath, which can help to sort of dissipate that adrenaline and that cortisol that's running through your body. It's almost sending those messages to, you know, your hypothalamus and everything to go, okay, danger is gone, breathe. The physiology of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So just in case you didn't know, you're listening to Radio Reverb. This is the Brighton Business Show on 97.2 FM. I am with my co-host, as always, Lisa Moore. And this month we are talking about public speaking, why it's important to put on your 2022 gold list, and hearing from expert Jude Bolton as well. So last part of the show, what I'd like to do is just kind of go through, because I've got fresh experience. I've just done an event. I met some incredible speakers. I'd been coaching them for months and actually meeting them in real life and seeing them do their talks. It was just so apparent that all the things that people think they probably need in order to be a great public speaker aren't necessarily the truth. So I kind of just want to throw it out there, really, and talk to you about it. I've got a few ideas in terms of what we think do great public speakers need, or what do we think is important to make a big impact with public speaking? I'll just throw it out there. And
I think we believe that you have to be hugely confident and extrovert to be a good public speaker. And we've already talked about, you know, public speaking is not just about being on stage, but let's just take that for an example. We believe that the people that are good have got this extrovert personality and they're hugely confident. Mm-hmm. Confident. I don't necessarily agree that you have to be an extrovert, nor do I agree that you have to have a huge amount of confidence. I think what you need more than anything is belief in yourself, passion in what you want to say, and also authenticity. That's what I think we probably need.
Yeah, totally agree. Jude, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think you said it at the beginning of the show as well, that people tend to put on the persona. And I think I'm always telling people to just drop their presenter voice. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't understand where we've all got this thing from where we have to go up and suddenly we go a bit robotic and very, very professional, you know, and then we speak in a monotone voice, very fast, and we don't have any of our personalities in what we're saying. I think it's this element of just kind of being natural, as you've said, and being yourself. And that's what we relate to. And most of my job, as you've said, Helen, is breaking down, you said, didn't you, the unbecoming everything that isn't you. Yeah, I'm just trying to break down these kind of layers that we put on, and it's armor, as you said, and trying to get people to just talk naturally. And that's what makes them engaging and effective speakers, ultimately.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think because I work with business owners, and I work with sort of entrepreneurs, I work with people who are the forefront of their business and they've got something to say. So I think one thing that really does make a big impact is having clarity on that. You know, obviously with TED, it's called an idea worth spreading. In general terms, I call it the core message. You know, what is the thing that you want to share through the medium of speaking? If you're thinking about standing on a stage and doing your good and making your dent in the universe, doing something for the greater good, helping people, whatever it might be, what is that message? Mm-hmm. Having that can really help to make, because otherwise, you know, people say, oh my God, I can talk about so many things, you know, and especially with a TEDx, it's a 15-minute talk. Of course, you get hour keynotes, you get more interactive workshops, you have shorter talks, longer talks. But essentially, it's the same thing. What are the audience going to leave knowing, feeling, doing differently as a result of you speaking? So I think that's definitely an essential. And as you said, Lisa, I'm so sorry. My stepdad is building a shed in my garden. Bless him.
Is that the hanging?
I thought that. Bless him. Thank you, stepdad. I thought you'd be done by now. The passion for the subject, as in I've lived through it. I've experienced it. I know what I'm talking about. Because confidence comes from that place, right? If you've got passion because you've lived through it, or you've got a story to tell, or your expertise is rooted in the topic, that's going to automatically increase your impact.
Yes. And actually, that's, I think, as I said right at the beginning, the passion for me when I was working in IT wasn't there. I didn't really understand the subject. I wasn't really very interested in disaster recovery solutions and managed services. But interestingly, there was the point where I was selling a managed service training solution, which was all about people. It was all about giving people something. And I remember when I worked on that project, being really passionate about it. And it was my biggest win ever, biggest sale ever, because I was really interested and passionate about what we were trying to do for this company. So I think it's so important that you have that passion for what you're talking about. And when you're talking about business, you're not necessarily talking about your personal story and what you've been through. You might be talking about the solution or the service or the product. But if it's something that you've designed, you've made, you've put your blood, sweat and tears into it, you're going to have that passion. So, and that will come through in how you communicate.
Radio Reverb.
7.2 Radio Reverb.
People don't think anybody wants to listen, and that's half the problem, is that you've got to remember that, you know, Helen, you're you know, look a lot at storytelling, don't you? And ultimately we learn through stories. We were brought up on stories, hopefully, if we were lucky enough to be read to lots, and we learned right and wrong from stories, and that's where everything comes from. So actually, once you just start sharing something, it doesn't matter how exciting it is, the audience engages a different part of their brain and starts connecting and going, oh, I did that, and I can see that, and I can picture myself doing that. And that's all that matters, you know, is just to add a bit of humanity, add a bit of yourself, add a bit of your day, you know, even when you walk into a room and you've got a meeting and you talk about the weather. Yes, we're British and we're always talking about the weather, but it makes everybody loosen up and relax and think, oh God, yeah, it is raining and it's awful. And, you know, that's the key. You don't have to have some really exciting content, or you don't have to be the expert on it. People just want to connect and engage with you. So just relax more and share your story.
Which leads me kind of nicely onto something that I feel is really important for you to make a big impact, is being real, being honest and being vulnerable. Vulnerability is a it's a topic that gets thrown around a lot now. Obviously, the work of Brené Brown has really moved that whole topic into the, more of the public eye around courage and shame and vulnerability, and how vulnerability is the antidote to shame, and courage is as well. And that, you know, public speaking is a kind of fear of shame, and actually, if we're vulnerable, it's an antidote to that. But, you know, being vulnerable can look different in many different guises and many different aspects when you're actually standing on a stage. It's not just bearing your soul. So I just wanted to get your views on that in terms of what you see as vulnerability in public speaking and where it has its place and how that can benefit people.
I think it's about honesty as well. And I think it's about being okay with making mistakes and being a human being, and again, getting rid of that presenter voice and just being you. Because I think I'm often explaining to clients about how actually it doesn't matter if you go wrong. It doesn't matter if you say something totally incorrect. It's how you deal with it and how honest you are. So again, it's back to the audience mirroring you and just wanting to feel comfortable. So if you make a big mistake and then go, what? No, hang on a minute. Let me just scrap that, start again. And you're relaxed and you're smiling and you're vulnerable and honest. Actually, everybody likes you, and you still have authority and impact and trust from your audience. Yes, it's when you're there, can't get the words out, stumbling, stuttering, which we all do because of nerves, but it's that kind of trying to cover up ultimately and put the armor up and hide away and make ourselves small. But if you make yourself big, if you make yourself open, if you share a bit of yourself, share your story, be vulnerable and own up to your mistakes and just be natural in yourself, that's what makes people connect with you.
I think there's also this fine line with vulnerability. Is you talked about bearing your soul, Helen. I think you can get to the place where you bear too much because you're trying to get the audience to love you or like you. And I think we all know what that's like, where it becomes not authentic because you're oversharing. There's that place of share what you're happy to share. You don't have to share everything. When you're telling a story, you know, yes, it's important that you're vulnerable and you're open and you're authentic and you're honest, but you don't have to overshare to get people on your side.
I think that's really important. I think it's being vulnerable for the purpose of the core message.
Yes.
You know, if your talk is about your journey story, that's the structure of your talk. So you're going to be sharing vulnerable parts, right? You're going to be, because maybe that's part of your business. That's how you help people and people can relate to that. Along the way, it's always important to think, how is this relevant? How is this vulnerability relevant to the purpose of the message I want to deliver? Is it aligned with it? I also think what Jude's saying there about being honest about mistakes, being okay with mistakes, right? When I think about a great keynote talk I saw about a guy that was leading around the world yacht race, and his team didn't want him to be their leader in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean anymore. And he had to put his hand up and admit his mistakes for them to then re-recruit him as their leader. And then they eventually won the race. But that just reminded me of vulnerability in I'm putting my hand up and being real in that I am not perfect. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. And stumbles, making light of a stumble. You disarm an audience if you make light of a stumble. I think about the talks, I pretty much stumble through every talk I've ever given. But that's all right. You know, I make a joke about it and then people laugh and then they're with you. They're rooting for you. Their barriers are down. Your barriers are down. So I think that vulnerability has many different facets to it.
Yeah. I think when you're giving a speech as well, if you suddenly go completely blank in your head, it's okay to say, what was I talking about? It's okay, because we're normal people. We get distracted, we forget what we're going to say. And I remember beating myself up about, I forgot to tell them this, or I forgot to say this, I forgot to say that. You have to remember that the audience have no idea what you were going to say in the first place. So if you forget a big chunk of your speech, think of it as a gift that you've been given to be able to deliver it in another one. Doesn't matter. They didn't know that you were going to say that.
Yeah. And it would probably sound more natural. And I'll talk about the don'ts in a minute. But if it's not so, you know, so set in your head, if it's not so regimented, if it is a little bit more, you know, flexible in terms of how you've put it together. So before we wrap up, and then we're just going to ask you a little bit more about yourself and your business in a moment, I'd like to end on the don'ts. What in your we can do a bit of a quick fire, you know, what in your eyes, in your mind, through your experience, are the kind of, here's what not to do in order to be a great public speaker or make an impact as a public speaker?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because as you become better at it, you can get away with a bit more. But when you first start, always prepare and practice.
Yes.
Doesn't matter how many times you do. I mean, I used to look in the mirror. I used to record myself. I used to speak out in the car or when I was walking the dog and just practice. So don't not prepare. Don't wing it. Although last night I went to Toastmasters and I did completely wing it.
Right.
But I've been doing it. Why? Because I ran out of time to prep. And partly as well, because I wanted to challenge myself out of my comfort zone to go, do you know what? I've got an idea about what I'm going to speak about. I'm just going to do it to push myself that little bit more.
So you freestyling is okay in certain situations when you know the subject?
Yes, I think so. But obviously when you're confident to be able to freestyle.
Mm-hmm. Jude, what are your thoughts on that?
Don't forget to say your name and your business. Most people I work with and also most networking events I go to, people will give their pitch and then they sit down and I'm like, sorry, who are you? And who do you work for, or what business do you run? And people are most terrified of introducing themselves. So I would say really work on your introduction and don't forget to actually say who you are.
Although I am going to be a bit controversial here.
Yeah.
I guess the type of talks that I help people with, you wouldn't introduce yourself at the beginning.
Okay.
You come out with a big bang.
Yeah.
To reel them in. So it might be a story, or it might be a memory, it might be a sound, or it might be a quote, and then you can introduce yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't leave.
No.
You said,
or it has to be on the slide, or it has to be, it has to be somewhere. There has to be a louder call to action, depends the type of talk it is. If it's a TED talk, of course, there's no call to action in terms of like follow me on social media, or the TED talk is about the idea. However, if it's an industry talk, your call to action absolutely should be, what you are, what you do, should be weaving what you do and who you are into the talk. If there's a sell involved in the talk, oh my goodness, absolutely be sharing who you are and what you do. Okay, what else is a don't, would you say?
I'd say don't make yourself smaller than kind of technology. Make sure your status is big. So most people hide behind something. It could be a lectern or a piece of paper or their note cards or a chair or a table. And it's brilliant when, get out a whiteboard and you're basically standing behind it, delivering your speech or delivering your presentation. So a question I always say to clients is, what is the point of you giving a presentation? If you're going to be like this, do you want to just print this out and email it round or send it round? If you are speaking, why are you speaking and what are you saying that is different to what you're writing down or what they're reading? Don't make yourself small, make yourself big.
Yeah, I totally agree. And obviously, so presentations and talks are absolutely slightly different in terms of how you're delivering that information. I totally agree. And I actually say to people with more of a talk, no cue cards, no lecterns, no props, hardly any slides. Slides, if you're going to use them, should enhance your talk. You shouldn't be guided by them. They should be visual, imagery, sound that lifts your talk up rather than provides a crutch for you.
Yeah.
And
don't read from your slides.
No. Minimal words, none at all, if possible, but minimal words.
Mm.
Absolutely. On the slides, absolutely. A presentation, of course, is completely different. You're going to have more slides, probably, and you're going to have more words on slides because it's a different type of flavor. And there's a place for that 100%. If you're doing a pitch, if you're doing it like a sales pitch in more of a presentation, of course, but still the same principles apply because people read slides. They're not reading you. So the less you can put on a slide, the better. And I absolutely, a handheld cue card, I know it's a crutch for people and I'm not poo-pooing it. I've been there, I've done it, I've used them. But when you're delivering a talk, it's taking away from you feeling engaged with the audience. Yeah. And so as much as possible, don't. Again, the event I've just done, we had people who had to have props. They had to have chairs because of disability and things like that. I actually coached a deaf lady, which was such an interesting experience. And she actually gave her talk. She actually spoke and gave her talk. And we put subtitles on the sides behind her. And she did it. And it was just incredible. Without any notes, without anything other than her voice, which she couldn't even hear. So I think, you know, that's inspiration and motivation for many of us.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think the only other thing I would say, if you are actually going to go up and be on stage talking about body language, is don't stand still in the same spot with your hands crossed in front of you or across your body or your legs crossed, which is what a lot of women do. And don't march backwards and forwards on the stage, which is what I used to do.
Oh, yes.
One side to the other, to the other, to the other.
Yeah. We were talking about presence earlier, and presence having, you know, there's high presence and there's low presence, and there's high uncontrolled presence, which is like flailing around. Or there's high controlled presence, which is having blocked movement, moving to a certain part of the stage when you're giving a point, using your hands, blocking and rooting yourself. And then, you know, low control presence, you know, people like Richard Branson have low controlled presence. They're not like Michael McIntyre. You know, they have presence, but it's controlled and it's a different type of presence. So I used to pace like a tiger. And again, with Ted, you have to stand in a dot. So you can't move outside that dot, which actually does help in terms of the pacing. But it can help you think. How about that for you, Jude, in terms of how you help people with their movement, in terms of kind of where they are when they're giving their talks?
Yeah. So I would say it's all about controlled movement. So echoing what you said, ultimately, no pacing, do move, but it has to be a controlled movement. And ideally, you sort of move somewhere, as you said, to make a point. You ground yourself, you speak, and then you may move again. I think sometimes it's about sort of waking up the audience slightly. You know, if you stay in one place, you're really sort of speaking to that side of the room a little bit too much. So, you know, depending on how confident you are, I tend to even try and seek out those that look the most disinterested and gravitate towards them and then try and lock eyes with them just to really say hiya.
I used to do that all the time when I was training people, and I even had a water spray in case they fell asleep, but that was a long time ago, and of course I wouldn't be able to do that anymore. But
but controlled movement. People are terrified of moving. It's another big thing that I have to work hard on. They just don't want to move their arms. They just want, you know, they're frozen to the spot. But again, movement makes you more natural.
Oh, this has been a fabulous discussion. Really, really interesting. And so many things to talk about with this. And I think having different angles and perspectives on this subject just shows how versatile it is. How many ways you can look at it. There's many ways to skin a cat. So it's been really, really great discussion. So, Jude, if people want to find out more about you and what you do, how can they get in touch with you?
So you can look me up on my website, which is speakingworks.co.uk, or you can drop me an email, which is jude@speakingworks.co.uk. Or you can have a look again on my website at Young Voices if you're interested in your children doing classes, because they run online too, so it doesn't matter where you are. Or if you're a business and you want your team, have a chat, because I do bespoke training too.
Awesome. That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much, Lisa, for the chat today.
It's been great. I think the trouble is we could actually carry on having this discussion for much, much more.
Well, there's plenty of topics coming up, right? We're going to be deciding what our next month's theme is. But you have been listening to the Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll look forward to seeing you and hearing you again next month.
Thanks for having me. We'll be right back.
by us.
Radio Reverb.
Radio Reverb.